But your last season, you broke your leg against Bedford.
Yeah,
I remember that.
Yummy.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, okay. It's easy to sit in the stand, isn't it? Or stand in the shed, as always. Then, did you? Awful question, really. But did you feel that was it, or?
Yeah, funny. Yeah,
it was that bad.
Yeah,
a lot of people said it was that bad. Even the crowd wondered if it was that bad.
Yeah, I mean, so I remember it well. The date was November 7th, 1998, and it was the season. We'd had a reasonable start to the season, and just felt that things weren't clicking. And it was about the game. Personally, was going quite well. I was getting this game. I was a few carries, and suddenly felt like things were clicking. And I can remember it happened just about 20 metres from the touchline on the grandstand side, and it was pretty innocuous, really. And just went into a tackle in midfield, pulled someone across, and my foot got caught in the ground and got tackled by one of our own players from the side, and it was a dislocated ankle and broken leg at the time. And, but it was all the things passed through your mind, but I knew it was pretty bad. As I said, I just thought that didn't look too good. But it was quite a comedy moment around it, really, is that I sort of sat there and my foot was pointing one way, and I sat up and I said to the referee, I said, "Stop the game, ref, I broke my leg." And we speak to Pete Glanville about this, and he always reminds me, and he said, the referee looked and stopped and hesitated, and all the players stopped and hesitated, and I was sat up, and he said, "Well, it was just the expression that said I broke my leg." And so then eventually the players stopped before the ref blew the game. The ref looked down and he said, because you had such a calm expression on your face, he said, he looked down and said, "Well, you haven't broke your leg." I said, "That's just your shin pad sticking through your sock there." Yeah. And the planner said to him, I said, "Ref, he doesn't wear shin pads." He goes, "Oh, right, that's broken then." So, a bit of a laugh about that after. So, great diagnosis. But that was it. So they came on, and obviously I tried to walk off because I've never been stretched off in my career. And I didn't want to then. And he said, "No, you're not walking off with that." So, I was a bit disappointed there. Thought I was going soft, and went off. And at the time, it's an injury. Ian Evans did a similar thing. He came back playing, and I think Lawrence Fabio's done it since, and a few others. But I can remember with the ankle, I'd done something similar ligament wise before, and I just, when you look at it, you in the back of your mind, you fear the worst. And I got back eventually. They said you'd be out for 2 or 3 months, but it took a long time to heal. And went through a process of coming back, and then eventually it was a case of I consulted the person who did the operation, and I kind of said, "I'm back running now, but these are the symptoms." And he said, "Well, if it was my ankle, I'd retire tomorrow, because you're going to give yourself some problems if you don't." So,
yeah.
So you've not played at any lower level?
No. So, I did at a period, getting back to a level of fitness, but that was kind of it. So I just completely knocked it on the head then. I got back playing had a few games on it, but I find it was a bit like playing with a lead boot on, and you kind of lose the you just lost something, and you could feel it. You get to know your body quite well, and I just took the medical advice. So I found it the best way I could deal with it. The fact that your rugby career is over, effectively, is to just get away from it, and that's what I chose to do.
Do you do any coaching now? Have you done any?
No, I did stuff with kids over time, but I got away from the game. Obviously I do some BBC Radio Gloucestershire summarising now, which is kind of how I keep in with the game. Do a bit with the 1873 club here at Gloucester afterwards, as the players come up, and on that side of things, so that kind of keeps me involved with the club. A little bit abstractly, I suppose, but obviously, you've got work and everything else, and it's just a time factor as well, as much as anything. But I think with coaching, it might be one of those things that my young son grows up, if he decides to play, he might get involved at that level. But at the moment, it's a time factor as much as anything.
You used to write a column, I seem to remember, for the club programme, didn't you?
Yeah, I did some. I mean,
Simon Devereux's diary, I think it was.
Yeah, called. I mean, that was keep me busy after I was injured, I think. Yeah, and
I think you've done a bit of it before, haven't you?
Yeah.
While you were actually on the field.
Yeah, yeah.
And then did more after you were injured.
I did a little bit of that, and it's just, I mean, I think the professional rugby thing, there's a boredom factor associated with it, and any opportunity to do something a little bit to fill your time, I mean, there was people who'd sit on these computer games even then, you know, and I could never get them. I just, why would you want to do that? And I always wanted to find something, you know, I'll pop in the office and speak to the financial chap here, and I could have a chat with him about, you know, what he was doing, just out of interest, you know, just something as a fresh interest, because that's the other thing with the shift from amateur to professional. All of a sudden it becomes your job. When it becomes your job, it becomes less interesting to talk about outside of your job. So you know, you kind of, it's nice to have something different to consider and get involved in. So, you know, I found that was one example where you could do something a little bit different.
Yeah.
How did you get into the broadcasting?
So that was so Ian Randall, who's been the sports producer there for years, he's I mean, he finished last year, but he did some stuff for me as a player. He's spoken to me, and unbeknown to me, he thought, based on the conversations we had at the time, and they're all a bit limited because I could never get in there before Mark Mapletoft, because he was always in there, you know, and as mates tended to do, and it was you know, that was it. So I never, you know, never used to seek it out or anything, and it was not something as forwards we tended to do there back in the day. But he contacted me, well, it must have been 7 or 8 years ago now, and Peter Butler had been doing it before and finished, obviously another good servant to the club. He said, would you be interested, come along? And so I said, my first reaction was, no, I don't want to do that, but I thought, give it a go. And I actually found it more enjoyable than I thought it would, because I think when you finish playing, particularly, and even as a player, you don't really enjoy watching rugby a huge amount. You tend to, I'll come down here a few times in boxes to catch up with people, and you would tend to enjoy having a beer and a chat and a catch up, and whether you saw the game or not was kind of irrelevant, but you find it, because you have to give an objective view of the game doing the radio, therefore makes it more interesting. So quite enjoyed it, and I'm still doing that now, and off to Munster next week. And you know, it's quite a nice way to keep handing with the club without having too much commitment on top of the day job.
Yeah.